2. And we're going to go over to free Ukraine in the east, and the republics, we'll call them. Russell Bentley is standing by to talk with us here. Are you there, Russell?
I sure am, Jeff. Good to talk to you again, my brother.
Hey, thank you. Let me just ask you as an opener, how are you doing and how are the good people of Ukraine doing? And there are some good people all over that country. We know that. They're not all in the east. So
that's right. This operation is about liberating them from foreign occupation that they've been under since the Maidan coup and also Nazi oppression. The operation is going according to plan. The Ukrainian army, it's already like in a chess game where you get to that point that you know no matter what they do, they're going to lose. And that's already beyond that point. But they're still putting up a very criminal fight. They're using, in the open terrain, the rural areas, the agricultural areas, excuse me, the Russians have already taken all the objectives that they want to at this point. You know, in the open terrain, army against army, there's no real contest. I've been, 50 miles behind the enemy lines already, or what were the enemy lines just a couple of weeks ago. Uh-huh. And I can tell you firsthand that the Russians in the open terrain are achieving their objectives right on schedule. In the main cities, what's happened is that the Ukrainian Nazis have made a decision to use human shields as a strategic part of their defense. They're not letting civilians evacuate the cities. They're shooting people, civilians that try to evacuate, and they're setting up firing points, like literally in these big apartment buildings, like the old Soviet style.
I got
like
it. I got you.
Style.
Yeah.
And then, it's a genuine war crime, and they should understand that war criminals are not subject to the Geneva Convention and like that. And so,
I think it's
making progress. We're definitely going to win, but it's still a hard fight.
Okay, well said. Good summary. What bothers me, and I've been watching this very carefully, it's quite clear that the Zelensky regime, I don't know if you got a chance to see that video of him packing his nose with nose candy, but it was pretty funny. He's
cracked up, man. He's
It's
like Hitler in the bunker in April 45, He knows his days are numbered.
Here's and I understand that Putin has some special ops people out trying to get rid of him, but we'll see. It's very sad to watch the Russians continue to try to open up green zones, free passage, to get these people out of the cities. And if they have to, they'll flatten the cities after the people leave. That's the goal anyway. But the Ukrainians will not let them leave. They're using many of these people in many cases, I'm not going to say all, but in many cases to protect the cities from Russian artillery and bombing. They're human shields.
Hold on now, Jeff. Hold on a second there, brother.
First of all, help me out.
The Russians, you understand, after they liberate Ukraine from foreign occupation and Nazi oppression, they're going to be responsible for, the condition of the people in Ukraine and helping them to rebuild.
Oh, God, yes,
They don't want to flatten the cities. I mean, they don't want to harm civilians, and they don't want to do any more destruction to infrastructure than is absolutely necessary, because everything they blow up now, they're going to be the ones that have to help rebuild. So, the idea is to do as little damage to people and property as possible while completely eliminating, these terrorists, not only the Ukrainian army and the Nazi battalions, but there are, thousands, maybe tens of thousands of ISIS cannibals that have been shipped in and have been working with Ukrainian army for years. And this is a verified, documented fact ever since the New York Times reported about it in 2015. You know, so, and it's been going on.
I remember.
The whole time.
You reported it here in 2015 that there were.
They've been bringing
in the South. Yes.
Yep. And they've been bringing in these idiot, you know, Western mercenaries, now volunteers, coming in from all over Europe, think they're going on a big safari and kill Russians. And they, you know, and mercenaries also do not fall under the laws of war. So, you know, these guys are going to be, they're going to stay here as fertilizer.
I wouldn't be surprised. What I was trying to make the point about earlier, just a minute ago, was that the Ukrainian army and military, and certainly a lot of the government, they're trying to keep these Ukrainian citizens in the cities as human shields to protect the loss of the cities, should that come to pass. So the people are not being allowed to leave. And your point about Russia, when they do liberate Ukraine, having to take charge of and be responsible for all of the civilians and the rebuilding of the infrastructure, that which needs to be rebuilt, is something that no one's even talking about except you. That's a big deal. Huge.
We know what the Ukrainian army is doing now is they're blowing up, excuse me, all the major bridges over, you know, any kind of rivers or something. They're blowing them up. This, you know, of course, hampers the advance of the Russian army, but doesn't stop it. I mean, the Russians have excellent engineering. They can, you know, build a pontoon bridge across any river in Ukraine in a matter of hours. You know, and there's also other ways around, but, you know, they're destroying their own infrastructure. I mean, in Mariupol, they blew down a five-story building that had 200 women and children in the basement. You know, and I mean, that was the Azov Battalion, you know, genuine Nazis. And, you know, those women and kids, you know, they're just not going to make it out. I mean, it's an active war zone. You know, they're buried under tons of rubble. You know, there's no way to get them out. And that was done on purpose. It's like a genuine atrocity that they're trying to blame on the Russians. You know, I mean, the propaganda is, you know, off the charts right now. You know, I mean, they're showing things like, you know, a chemical factory in China that blew up, you know, 5 years ago or something. They're saying, oh, this is Kiev right now, you know, or, I mean, the explosion of the grain storage or the ammonium nitrate in Beirut Harbor. You know, they're saying, oh, yeah, it's Kharkov. You know, I mean, they're using scenes from video games and saying that it's what's
jet
happening
fighters.
In Ukraine right now. It's just insanely,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
complete BS. And, you know, the information war, by the way, my YouTube channel got taken down from YouTube 3 days ago, had 21,000 subscribers. I was just going viral. I had one. I don't know if you saw it, dude. You can look it up, or I'll send you the link. I had one video that I made. It was 41 seconds long. It showed me with a column of Russian Army infantry fighting vehicles, and I was saying that, you know, I was explaining that, you know, we're on the move. We're only using about 10% of our military power, and we're going to kick some ass. That video got 150,000 views in less than half a day.
I ran
it. Of course,
yes.
It was found to be in violation of the community standards. It was deleted. The next day, I got another video deleted, and then I got the message: your channel is deleted completely forever from YouTube. You know, and so RT YouTube channel was deleted today. You know, so the information warfare—they're really shutting it down.
Yeah,
you know, any kind of financing between the U.S., I mean, even on, like, you know, civilian personal levels, that's all shut down. Our human aid fund in Florida has been getting death threats. You know, I mean, like, you know, maniacs have been coming by the church that they have there and threatening them and stuff, you know. So it's, I mean, it's just out of hand already, you know, and it's only going to get worse. I'll be real happy, and I hope that we will be able to have another conversation like this again.
Well, we will.
After today.
We will. Absolutely. Here's two things. One, I did run the story about your YouTube channel being taken down and all of your materials deleted. This is just a despicable thing to even have to report. Just vile. But secondly, we know that the bogus Ukraine government, which is it was a coup d'etat 8 years ago. Yanukovych was thrown out. He was legitimately elected, like him or otherwise. And we overthrew it. Vicky Nuland, $5 billion U.S., etc. Now, the Ukraine government and NATO, believe me, are using the highest level public relations companies, individuals, corporations, whatever, to flood the internet with this bogus information. I've been caught running a couple of videos that were not as they were presented. I have never seen more lies in video being called news than I have in the last week to 10 days. It's really drowning. We don't know, as a populace, we really can't tell what's going on over there. And that's the game, though. We know on the first day, the Ukraine Air Force was essentially neutralized, and most of the, certainly, middle and eastern airfields were taken out. Now there's some bombing reports of the western airfields being taken out by Russian missiles, very accurate long-range missiles taking out the airports. We don't know where this is going. The point is, you made it. This is a propaganda war, maybe the likes of which we haven't seen in a long, long time. They're throwing lie after lie after lie out there, and the people don't have anything to compare it with unless they know where to look to find reality. And that's very hard to do in a war situation.
And getting harder every day. I mean, they're literally, you know, I mean, they've already shut off, you know, domains like .ru and .su. It's the new Iron Curtain, bro. And I mean, it's only getting ready to get a lot worse.
All right, let me ask you this question. Hmm? It's really important. I have not seen from the West, and I mean NATO, the U.S., Canada, whatever, one legitimate news story or news report where the language was conciliatory, was talking about peace, was talking about let's stand down on this. I have only seen offensive war talk coming from the West toward Russia and Ukraine, free Ukraine. I have not seen anything else. Am I correct?
Of course. And you know what? I mean, they have, I mean, look, the strategy of the U.S. And their NATO lapdogs now is to simply create as much destruction. They know that they're getting kicked out of Ukraine. There's no way about it. The Russians are going to denazify and demilitarize Ukraine. They can't do anything about it. They do not dare, you know, to send one soldier into Ukraine to throw a rock. But they know it's going to happen, so their strategy now is to do as much death and destruction as possible. Look, they are still sending in over, you know, almost, they're sending in 1,400 tons per day of weapons to Ukraine. Even now,
how are they coming in, Russell? How are they coming in?
They're coming in on the ground. They can't come in on air because they'll be shot down. They're flying them into eastern Poland and bringing them across the border. And I'm talking about the anti-tank missiles, the NLAWs and the Javelins, and also Stinger man-carried anti-aircraft missiles. You know, I mean, so this is stuff that's just going to be to create chaos. It's going to create, like, you know, a guerrilla warfare after the main military operations are over. You know, they gave away 20,000 Kalashnikovs in Kiev a couple of weeks ago, just on the street. They just, you know, handed them out with ammunition and magazines to anybody that walked up and wanted them. And it became immediately, you know, like Mad Max. You know, I mean, you know, stores were getting robbed. People were shooting, you know, their neighbors that they didn't like.
They gave them they armed criminals, and I read about it. I couldn't believe
it. Yeah. They're emptying the prisons, even, you know, the worst war criminals of this whole war, the Tornado Battalion. These guys, I mean, you know, raping, robbing, torturing, you know, monsters, you know, and they let them out, you know. and gave them weapons and said, go back to the front, you know. So it's the strategy of the West is to, you know, just as they've done in every single city or every single country that they've invaded, you know, over the last 30 or 40 years, there is to destroy Ukraine, to make it like, you know, Somalia or Libya, you know. And that's their plan, and that's what exactly what they're trying to do.
All right. I read a story, in fact, I ran the story, that they had managed to smuggle in or ship in, truck in, 17,500 approximately Javelin and Stingers and other things. And they talk about these Javelin rockets as being anti-tank. They're not anti, they're anti-truck, anti-APC, anti-tank, they're anti-anything. And they're damn deadly.
Yeah, including like bunkers or houses or any place that soldiers might be. And you're right, exactly, 17,000 of them.
That's not good. Now,
well, you know those things, they cost about fucking, they cost about $50,000 each too, you know?
Sure. Sure.
Do the math.
I still feel, and I know where those weapons are coming from, at least in part. So do you, very well, better than I do. They're coming from the U.S. and U.S.-controlled various military organizations in Europe. And doesn't that make USA, doesn't that make us an active accessory component to the war against Russia already, even though we don't have a NATO trooper or an American military infantryman in the country shooting that we know about? Doesn't that make us an accessory to this crime?
Of course it does.
By giving and supplying?
It certainly does.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah.
And you know, I mean, we are, believe me, bro, this the Russians aren't going to forget about this. You know, they see exactly, you know, everything that, that the U.S. has done, you know, I mean, ever since the beginning, Maidan, MH17, which was a false flag done by the U.S. and Ukraine to blame Russia for, you know, they're not, Russians don't forget, and they do get their payback. And I'll tell you how they're going to get it too, man. They're going to get it economically. You know, this military war, the major part of it is going to wind up here in the next couple of weeks. And then there's going to be like, you know, a pacification, denazification operations, war crimes trials, and in Ukraine. But then the really, you know, the really scary war, the economic war between Russia and China and the U.S. and Europe is going to be the war. You know, and here's the thing, man. This guy Michael Parenti, a great one of the greatest political scientists of the 20th century in the U.S. He once wrote, economic war is military war in slow motion. And, you know, it's like you remember when Madeleine Albright was asked about the 500,000 Iraqi children that the Clinton regime economic sanctions had killed. And she said, oh, we think it's worth it, you know.
She sure
did. We know it's the same vermin, you know, in charge today who think that, you know, however many civilians and children get killed in Ukraine now, that they think it's worth it. But those 500,000 Iraqi kids were killed by economic sanctions. And that's what's going to happen next. I mean, you got to understand that, you know, the United States might be okay from a food security standpoint, you know, by the end of this year, maybe. But
correct.
The European
maybe.
Union is going to be absolutely screwed. Because I tell you, man, they, you know, I mean, you understand that the European Union in 2020 sued Russia. They had long-term signed contracts for energy supply of propane gas from Russia to the European Union.
Right.
It was for $250 per 1,000 cubic meters of gas.
Right.
In 2020, when everything shut down, the price of gas on the world market went down to about 125, about 50% went down half. Mm-hmm. And even though the Europeans had these, you know, signed, sealed, and delivered, you know, long-term multi-year contracts with Russia, they went to the Strasbourg Economic Settlement, International Economic Settlement Court, and they sued Russia, basically, and they demanded that the contracts be renegotiated and that the Russians sell their gas to Europe priced on the open market, you know, market prices. I mean, it was a totally rigged court, you know, I mean, and even though, you know, it was that the contracts were ironclad, they had no right at all to complain or get out of them. The court found in favor of Europe and demanded that the Russians, you know, sell their gas at market price. Well, so for a year, Russia had to sell their gas at 50% of the price that they had negotiated to sell it for. And they lost $5 or $6 billion that year doing that. But in 21, the price came back up and, you know, it went from, you know, the 250, it went up to 1,500, you know. So now the Europeans are screaming because they're having to pay, instead of, you know, ripping off the Russians for $150 per 1,000 cubic meters, they're having to pay $1,200 more. And that was a couple of weeks ago, bro. I tell you, yesterday the price was $3,800 per 1,000 cubic meters of gas.
They're not going to make it. Europe will not make it.
Here's the most important thing, bro, is that the production of agricultural fertilizers, chemical fertilizers, is an extremely energy-intensive industry. And because the agricultural fertilizer productions in Europe have just simply shut down because they can't afford to pay that kind of price for gas. And even if they did and produced the fertilizer, the price that they'd have to sell that fertilizer at, the farmers can't pay.
No, so, and I mean, Putin has shut down all exports of any Russian-made fertilizer to the West. Think about that.
There's going to be, in Europe and maybe in the United States, a real, you know, the word famine could well apply.
Oh, I expect it. I really do. I don't think there's any other way about it. There should have been a second gas pipeline, but there's not. They put they put the clamps to that. The stupid people in NATO and Europe.
Well, but wait. Remember, bro, at some point you have to say, you know, nobody can be that stupid. This can only be intentional.
No coincidences. You know
what? I mean, how can they not understand what was going to happen? How can they not understand that, you know, if you don't have fertilizer in the spring on the ground, then you don't have food in the fall for the harvest. You just simply don't. And if there's no food, I mean, of course, you know, a billionaire doesn't care if a loaf of bread costs $500. You know, it's like, it doesn't matter. Money's like water to him. But people that, you know, even if they could afford the food, there's not food for them to even, you know, to even buy at any price, you know, because whatever food's left is going to go to the bosses, you know. So, I mean, this is being done intentional. And it brings back the whole most important point for people in the U.S. and Europe to understand is that Russia is not their enemy. Their enemies are the people that own and control and rule their governments, which is not, you know, democracy is a sad joke. Anyone that still votes in the EU or in the United States is an idiot. You know, it's like it's political masturbation. You know, it might feel good, but it doesn't do nothing, and it just leaves a mess that somebody's got to clean up later. So
very well, you know, said. Yeah, you know,
people
totally
got to
right.
understand that, you know, their real enemy is right there in their own country. The ones that are, you know, playing all these games that, I mean, it's not because they're stupid. It's because they're doing this on purpose.
You got it. Let me contribute something here to the conversation. You
Sorry
remember
about
the?
That.
No. It's okay. That's, you said it fine. Do you remember the Deagle.com projections? And how every country was shown to have X number of people when they first put this out in 2013. I saw it in 2017. By 2025, the number of people in each country on the planet was projected to be a different number by 2025. This is a projection, a population projection, a GDP projection, a military projection. Deagle.com. If you haven't seen it, I'll send you the link. By 2025, as you know, then The UK is supposed to have about 17 million people left, right? Germany is down, way down. France is down, way down. The US is down to about 100 million people instead of 325. They're going to achieve most of this with the injections for this phony pandemic. Those injections are biological weapons, as you well know. You know it all. Now, sure. I think that the coming drought here and the coming food shortage and famine there are going to team up to take out a hell of a lot more people. And if we do get into a limited nuclear exchange, which we'll talk about a little later here, if they push Putin into a corner intentionally so hard that he has to defend himself, we're going to lose more people. A war between Russia and the U.S. and NATO will cost the lives of about a billion more people. The idea is, and I believe the Deagle.com projections to be a correct and accurate forecast of what is planned. Will it happen? I don't know. We'll know by 2025. They're supposed to take the world population down to about a half a billion or a billion people. That's their ultimate goal. And I think what you just described is a part of that matrix. There's three or four key things that are going to be used to kill off a lot more people. There's not going to be war. They've already done it with their damn vaccine, which is a biological weapon. So we've got all the ingredients here, Russell, to take this right to the Deagle.com projections by 2025. Everyone who's gotten a shot is already now beginning to suffer immune collapse. Call it AIDS. Not HIV/AIDS, but AIDS. They're going to try and blame it on HIV, but that isn't going to work for the smart people. Their immune systems, those who have been shot up, are failing. Failing. The Germans proved it. Two shots, and the average person had only 12% of his or her immune system left after just two shots. Okay? Some of those people are taking four shots now. So this is genocide. It is genocide. That's what it is. And there are many factors. Now, when you see that little gay, the Kiev cokehead going before the House of Commons and getting a standing ovation in London, it must make your stomach turn. I mean, that little fart, I don't know what you want to call him, but he's obviously a fraud. He's selling his mansion on the west coast of Italy. He's got another mansion in Florida, it is said. I haven't seen it. I can't prove it, but that's the word. This guy is being called a Churchill. I don't like Churchill at all, at all. Me but neither. he's called a Churchillian leader in stature. What do the people of Ukraine really think of this guy?
They hate his guts, just like they hated Poroshenko. You know, I mean, I was in some liberated villages this last week, you know. I mean, and the thing is, do you know what the Russians have done in the liberated areas? Because the IMF put very strong austerity demands on Ukraine for the money that they already lent them. But and those include, like, they've quadrupled the cost of utilities. You know, I mean, utilities in Ukraine were equal basically to European rates. While the, you know, basically the salaries here in Western Ukraine were, you know, like, you know, between 1/10 and 1/4 of what the salaries were. You know, I mean, so people were paying. I mean, you know, they were paying as much or being charged as much for, you know, heating and water, gas and electricity as people in Europe on, you know, 1/4 of this income or less. And the first thing the Russians have done since they've gone, you know, in the areas that they've liberated, is they say, hey, you know what? We're going back. We're going to start selling you, you know, utilities at the same price as in Donbass and in Russia. You know, I mean, and all your debts for, you know, the high prices that you have before that you didn't pay, we erase those. You know, I mean, so.
Well,
I mean,
we're not hearing that over here.
People. Well, yeah, exactly. That ain't going to happen there. But, you know, I've seen people crying with joy when they see us coming, you know, when they understand that, you know, that the Nazis are gone and we're not going to let them come back, you know. And, you know, when, like what you were saying before about these Deagle reports, I have in fact, seen those. And, you know, unfortunately, they, I think that they'll be very accurate. I think, you know, we're going to be in for some hard times for, you know, pretty much everybody in the world. I think Russia is in a position to, you know, to the extent that it, the war doesn't go totally nuclear, you know, we're in a good position here to take care of our own people. But, you know, you understand, like, what you were just talking about. And, you know, there's another word that goes along with genocide, which is completely appropriate and accurate. But there's another word, too, and that's called apocalyptic. And if you remember, in the Bible, in the Revelations, you know, it talks about the four horsemen of the apocalypse. And that was pestilence, which means disease or, you know, biological weapons. It was war and famine. And then the fourth one.
I can't
one
remember
is
the
death.
Fourth one. Death.
The fourth
that's
one is
the,
death.
That's the final one, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Good to bring that up. Very important. There are two things I want to cover in our remaining time. First, I want to go and take a look at, through your eyes and the eyes of the people in free Ukraine in the East and the Donbass republics, 30 BSL level 3 and BSL level 4 biological weapons research and construction laboratories have been pinpointed and captured by Russia so far, or certainly they know where they are. The ones that they have captured, you know damn well they grabbed all the computers, they grabbed the hard drives, they grabbed the actual samples of what they were working on. They probably grabbed some of the scientists, too, to find out what the hell was going on there. Now, I think that Putin is going to play that as a trump card, no pun intended, at some point in the very near future. I also think that Putin is going to lay out the truth about what really happened on 9/11 and how our government over here was largely involved with the whole damn thing along with the Mossad. I think he's got some tremendously powerful cards to play on the world stage. This man is nobody's fool, so we will see. But let me ask you about these bioweapons laboratories. How many or how much of Ukraine was aware of the fact that the U.S. Pentagon, or Pentagram as I call it, built up to 30, maybe more, I don't know, biological weapons laboratories in Ukraine? How many people knew that?
Well,
was this common knowledge to the public?
I wouldn't say it was common knowledge to the public. Of course, I've been talking about it for 4 or 5 years now, I think, even with you before.
Yep.
But it is an indisputable fact. Yesterday, Victoria Nuland came right out and said it in an exchange with Ted Cruz.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and she, you know, she used like some weasel words and, you know, said, oh, it's, you know, I mean, but it, they were definitely bioweapons laboratories. The United States had at least a dozen, and I'm sure that the number 30 is probably closer to the more exact figure. But I mean, this and these and the papers that are coming out of them are showing that they were exactly interested. I mean, what they were studying was using migratory birds as vectors for disease that right. were that would be developed to target specifically people with Slavic DNA and the birds that fly over Ukraine and Russia in their migrations. I mean, so this is, you know, I mean, this is, you know, it's like comic book villain evil, you know? I mean,
oh no, I got it.
No.
Yeah.
And they were really doing it, you know, and again, Russians don't forget about this kind of stuff, you know, and I mean the you know, it was Putin literally said, and I quote, "Those who force Russia into war will learn the true meaning of pain." And he's not kidding. And you know, and I guess you could even call it revenge, because, you know, at this point, you know, the Putin and the Russians, the Kremlin, understand that, you know, what the U.S. and NATO is doing, you know, is literally the Fourth Reich. It is the 21st century version of Nazism. And, you know, the Russians, you know, they hate war and they hate Nazis more than anybody in the world because they suffered the most from it in the Second World War. But, they've got a right to get some payback, and they're going to get it, and it's going to hurt, you know. So you can't blame them.
No, I don't. Let me ask one other question before I get to my second question. And that's the stories we're getting over here of the number of Russian dead and the number of vehicles, heavy armor that's been destroyed, the number of Russian jets. We saw the BS about what the ghost of Kiev shot down 6 Russian fighter jets in one day. Total lies, total fabrication. We know, we got that. Are the Russian losses 10, 15,000 dead already? Is there any truth to any of that? What do you have for figures for us that we can straighten out the lies that were being fed nonstop?
Well, okay, so first of all, there's no exact figures on that. Although, because that's like a strategic military secret at this point.
The estimates are
maybe 1,000 to 1,500 Russian soldiers have been killed. And with comparing to 8,000 to 15,000 Ukrainian soldiers so far, with the deaths of civilians in the multi-hundreds, but less than 1,000 so far. Or these figures that I saw are from a couple of days ago, so they're a little bit higher by now, I'm sure. But,
right.
I mean, the thing you got to understand is you look at, you know, the original, you know, two armies facing off. Russia destroyed the Ukrainian air capabilities in the first hours of the operation, you know, more than 2 weeks ago. You know, the skies over Ukraine are in absolutely complete control of Russia. I mean, there is a danger to low-flying aircraft and particularly helicopters from the Stinger missiles, you know, of which there's apparently 17,000 of them in Ukraine right now.
Wow.
But, the Russian armor, the Russian troops are overwhelmingly, mm-hmm. Remember, most of the Ukrainian army is still sitting on the Donbas front where they were getting ready to make a huge offensive and come into the main cities and, again, use human shields as their defensive strategy against Russian air power, artillery, missiles, and rockets.
Wasn't that supposed to be the day after Putin made his move? He moved a day early to prevent that invasion of the Republics
exactly
in Donbass.
Right. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And this goes to show you how, you can only say, like, satanic. They were planning to begin their attack on the 23rd of February, which in Russia is a major national holiday. It's called the Day of the Defenders of the Fatherland.
Huh.
And what they were going to do was come in and take over Donbass. And there were even actually plans to attack some parts of southern Russia, Rostov and Krasnodar. But what they were going to do was try and hand Russia a crushing defeat on the day that they celebrate, you know, the people that defended their country, you know. So that, you know, it would spoil whatever future celebrations they would have, you know, in the future. But
got it.
And it's exactly like you said, Putin, you know, they had complete coverage of everything in the highest levels of Ukrainian military. And they knew exactly when it was coming. I mean, a friend of mine in the Spetsnaz battalion here, you know, he told my wife and I, he said, look, man, at the later part of next week, don't be in Petrovsky District where your house is. Come to the center of the city because it's going to kick off.
Oh, that's why you moved there. I got it.
Yeah, well, I mean, in Petrovsky where we live, it's like, I mean,
yeah.
And plus Petrovsky District sticks out into the Ukrop lines. You know, it's surrounded on three sides. It would most absolutely have been, if that assault had happened, would have been the first place they would have taken. And just like the German Nazis, you know, it would have been the assault troops come in and pass through, and then mm-hmm. come the special Einsatzgruppen, the Nazi battalions, for cleansing operations, if you understand what that means.
I sure do. What happened or what has happened so far to the 140,000 troops along the line, the front lines, the Ukraine army, that 140,000? Where did they go? Have they been dispersed? Have they been liquidated, a lot of them? Some of them went to the south, I think.
They're mostly still there, just sitting there. They've continued to shell the cities sporadically. It's not real heavy shelling. I think basically, you know, the Russian military command has told them, look, we're not going to attack you unless you attack, you know, the cities. We're gonna take over the rest of the country pretty soon. They're already surrounded. I mean, the Russians have closed the gap behind them, and you know, there's still a lot of Donbass defenders on the line here. You know, I mean, they're not all liberating Mariupol and heading forward. I mean, there's been some advances by our guys on the line here, but basically, you know, I mean, this is the major part. I mean, the Ukrainian soldiers that have not committed war crimes have nothing to fear and therefore no reason to fight, you know, and they are at least a significant portion of the ones that are on the line here. Conscripts that, you know, either got forced to join or joined to just to have a job or something.
All right,
you know,
I can see.
They don't want to die.
I can see where this is going. They don't have anything to fear
by surrendering.
Right. They're going to have to make a decision here at some point. Do I surrender and live, or do I die? They're going to get. I think that's very smart. I think that's what exactly is being set up, as far as I can tell from here.
And again, it's according to the exact strategy of the Russians to minimize the death and destruction, you know, for everybody on both sides.
Well, they got to live with these people. They got to get along with them, of course.
Exactly. It's like. In the Art of War by Sun Tzu, the most important military document ever written 2,500 years ago, and the most important point in that whole book is this. He said, the greatest warrior is not the one who wins every battle. The most excellent warrior is the one who wins without fighting. And Vladimir Putin is the most excellent warrior, and he's trying to fight as little as possible.
Okay, I've got about 6 minutes left, Russell. This is very important. If the NATO-US axis pushes Putin, can you see a point where Putin will have to fire back with at least tactical nukes? Do you see that, or does he need it?
I do not see a point where Russia will use any kind of nuclear weapon first. I do not see that, because here's the thing, bro, is just with conventional forces, Russia can go all the way to the English Channel if it wants to with no problem. No problem. I mean, the Ukrainian army is tougher than most of the armies of the European Union. You know, I mean, like the German Bundeswehr has like 140 tanks in the whole German army. You know, I mean, so they don't, I mean, the thing is that Russia does not want it to escalate. Russia will not escalate. They can take as much of Europe already with conventional military power. You know, they can destroy Europe and the United States through economic means. They don't have to, you know, nuke Washington, D.C. or something to disable the country as a functioning state. They can do that, and they may well do it, you know, economically. But, and, you know, if nukes are used, I guarantee it will be the United States or, you know, some of their proxy actors that will use it first.
All right. It could be a false flag. The economic sanctions that are being thrown on Russia seem to be hurting Americans far more already than it's harming Russia.
Mm-hmm, exactly. And again, this is where people need to understand Russia is not the enemy. These economic pain that the regular American people are going through is not caused by Russia. It is caused by the people who impose their rulers, the rulers of the United States, who are imposing these sanctions without right. any consideration for how they're going to affect the regular people in the U.S. and Europe. And it's going to affect them in a devastating way, devastating.
We're looking at $8.70 a gallon, headed to $10 a gallon for regular gas. And this was in Southern California, Russell.
That's insane, so, man.
Yeah.
And
we're looking at
$10. Let me just say this. Let me just say this. It's about $2 a gallon in Donetsk today. It's about less than $2.50 a gallon for okay. the good stuff, 95 octane.
Right. Wow.
Russia has right. the food reserves. Russia has all the energy reserves it needs. Russia has the most powerful army, you know, in Europe for sure, you know, in the western end of the Eurasian landmass. It can totally handle anything that U.S. or NATO or any EU can try and do with it. I mean, mm-hmm. Russia is prepared for what's coming. The EU is absolutely unprepared. The United States will be lucky if it survives, but it's going to suffer. And it's not the fault of Russia that what's coming.
I agree. Most Americans don't know that, for example, there are a ring all around Moscow of underground nuclear bunkers by which they can put, I believe it's 95 or almost 100% of the population of Moscow in these bunkers within 30 or 45 minutes. They can do that.
Well, I don't know about that, bro. There's like 16 million people in Moscow.
They've got a lot of shelters.
I mean, you got to see the traffic in Moscow. It makes New York City look like Wyoming.
Crazy, huh?
But, all right. I mean, the thing is, what they do have is the best air defense and anti-missile system in the world. So, you know, I mean, perhaps some would get through, but, you know, it's criminal insanity for the U.S. or NATO, I mean, to even think about nuclear anything.
You know, and I'm only worried about false flag. That's all I'm worried about. I know. Yeah. I just don't see any. There's no reason for Russia to ever take a first strike like this. I don't see it happening. I am not confident about this government in this country or NATO, whoever's controlling NATO right now.
Yeah.
All right. Now, we've got just 3 minutes left. What haven't we talked about that we need to talk about?
Okay.
Anything more about these bioweapons labs or whatever?
Let me say a couple of things about the information war and just a general closing. Okay. My YouTube channel is shut down. RT YouTube channel is now shut down. There's another social network called VKontakte. It's like the Russian version of Facebook. Okay. I've been on it for a few years. It's a little bit of a hassle to set up, but you know, you can use like a Firefox browser with a translate add-on, and it's really easy. It changes everything into English.
Okay.
It's worth. I mean, the level of discourse and the quality of just people in general that are on there is far, far higher than anything on Facebook. I mean, Facebook is, you know, a sad joke. You know, it's a center of censorship
and
know
fake
news.
Is.
You know, so people should really look at VKontakte, and that's VKontakt. And then there's also another one called Telegram, and that's something else. I'm on VKontakte. I'm on Telegram. I also have put up some videos on BitChute. I'm going to be looking at Odyssey and also Rumble here in the next week or so. But alternative media is really important. Everybody, I mean, they're going to shut down. They're going to block VKontakte and Telegram in the United States. But hopefully, at least for a while, a VPN, a virtual private network, you know, where you can change your IP address and go around like that, that will get you around it for a while. Information warfare is going to really kick up. And, you know, the truth is an important weapon. And you know, it is the best defense against propaganda and BS, you know, from your real enemies who are lying to you. You know, so this is really, it's going to be a tough few years. People, get as ready as you can. You know, say your prayers, you know, look into your heart, you know, and understand the difference between real good and real evil, and decide which side you're on, because this is a war between good and evil. Of evil against good, and you know, we're not all going to make it, but we all got a soul. We're all going to another life after this one that depends on what we do in this one. So say your prayers, be good. You know, even in a war, don't lose your humanity. Keep in touch, and may, you know, good luck to all good people.
Yeah.
May God protect the innocent, and may the rest of us get everything we deserve.
I want to tell you that there are a lot of people listening who have followed your work since we were on 8 years ago and so forth. Your work in terms of humanitarian aid to the people in Donbass, in Donetsk especially, and I did run that video of you before that high school class giving them a little talk. That was really important. I wish people understood, who don't listen to this program, the real Russell Bentley. You have done some extraordinary things, and I'm sure the people in your country really appreciate you. So don't ever forget that.
Sure. You know, courage is the key to happiness, bro. You cannot be happy if you are afraid. So don't be afraid. You know, be wise, be careful, but don't be afraid. That's the most potent weapon that our enemies have is fear. So don't be afraid.
All true. Russell, thanks for being here. You take care of yourself. We'll talk soon.
Thank you so much, Jeff. I can't tell you how much it means to me to have a friend like you. And I hope we'll be able to talk again anytime.
Okay. All right, my friend. Take care. All right. Russell Bentley. He is a Russian citizen. He is not an American citizen. He went over there because he loved it there, and he is contributing mightily to his people. So go take a look at that article if you want to see a neat video. It's very impressive. We will be right back with Hour 3 next.